and welcome to season 2 of 180 Degrees. For the next 8 episodes, we're sharing stories from people across Ireland working towards a cleaner energy future. We chat to the people who are making a real difference in the area of sustainable transport, home energy, and in our communities. We hear from businesses who are cutting carbon emissions, and we learn how energy research is shaping Ireland's future. 180 Degrees is brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland and is supported by the Government of Ireland. Hello, I'm your host, Louise Ryan, and joining me today is Martina Hennessy, Principal Officer of Offshore Renewable Energy at the Department of the Environment, Climate and Communications, and Patricia Comiskey, Programme Manager of Offshore Energy in SEAI. In today's episode, we are going to be looking at the careers of two senior women leading on change and innovation in what has historically been a very male-populated sector. We will also be chatting about the offshore wind sector and what measures are being taken to increase its viability in Ireland. Welcome to the podcast, Martina and Patricia. Delighted you could both join me and really looking forward to chatting to two women who are leading the offshore wind sector in Ireland.
It's great to be here.
Thanks, Louise.
So Martina, I'm going to ask you first to introduce yourself and tell us about your career. So what has led you to your current role in offshore renewable energy?
Well, that's a tricky question to answer, really, because I've moved around quite a bit during the course of my career. I would have started out with a degree in science, and following that, I did a master's in geographical information systems. And because I realized early on I didn't want to work in a lab, I was more interested in working with data. But I was always interested in the environmental and scientific areas of work. So I followed my master's by starting to work in the public sector, but I also moved shortly after my first role, which was an ordnance survey in England. I moved into the private sector doing consultancy work. And I followed that for a number of years, sort of moving back and forth between public and private, starting out in very technical roles to begin with, doing a lot of data analysis, GIS type work. And I was quite happy with that to begin with. But I started to want to take on more responsibility, get more involved in strategy and looking at the bigger picture. And that led me to taking on more senior roles. And ultimately, I joined the civil service then in 2016. And I actively sought a move into the department where I am now in 2019, because I think there's a huge range of really interesting work going on in this department, and certainly lots of parts, areas that I'm interested in. And I feel I'm really lucky to have got the move into the offshore energy space just in the last few months, because there's a lot of really exciting things happening in this space that I'm looking forward to getting more involved in the coming years.
And describe your role, your current role at the Department of the Environment, Climate and Communications then, Martina.
So I've set up a new unit within the energy section of the department. There's already a team looking at offshore energy, but because there's so much going on in this space, more resources are being put into it. So my role is to lead, set up this team. We have three major areas of work that we're responsible for. So one is developing the legislation to allow the offshore energy sector to develop in Ireland. There's a very big bill progressing, which the Department of Housing are leading on, which will set out how the marine space, of which we have such a huge amount, how that's going to be developed in the coming years in a very safe and sustainable way. And we're inputting into that to ensure there's a good framework in place to allow offshore energy projects to develop, but in a very sustainable way to benefit the country as a whole. Once that bill is enacted, then we'll be setting up or starting to operationalize a regime to manage applications to develop offshore. So there's a huge amount of work in getting that right, ensuring there's good, robust, transparent processes in place. And then the third big area of work we have to do is to look at our marine resource and try and quantify, looking out into the future, what the capabilities are in terms of different technologies that are in early days of development, what the potential for those in our offshore space is, how we can best utilize them into the future to help the country move towards the zero emissions target that we have for 2050, but to enable that to benefit coastal communities as well. So that's a much more strategic place, piece of work looking much further out into the future. And it's an area where the SEAI is going to work very closely with us as well.
Absolutely. And there's obviously like a lot of potential and huge excitement around working in that particular role. And you've mentioned that you worked in both the private and public sector previously. So what this time around has attracted you to the public sector?
Well, I suppose when I look at my career, I haven't really set out with a set game plan as a plan as to where I wanted to end up at any particular point in time. I think for me, I've always been interested in learning and developing myself and taking on challenges. And there's been a natural progression, I suppose, from moving where I started with more technical roles to taking on more of the management and leadership roles in various areas. What interests me about energy in particular is that we're at the very start of something huge that's going to benefit the country immensely. I think the public sector has a huge, varied amount of roles and opportunities, and I don't think it's always well understood outside. I've certainly enjoyed working in the private sector as well. I think I've learned a huge amount from different places that I've worked. And there's benefits to both. And I think the advantage I have in this role, because I'm setting something up and involved working with a lot of other people in setting something up for the future, that it gives me opportunity to bring together a lot of my past experiences and things that I've learned throughout my career and be able to apply them when everything is so much in a state of flux, if you like, that we're at this tipping point where we're hopefully at the beginning of what's going to be a very exciting period of time for the offshore industry in Ireland.
Absolutely. And Trish, I just want to bring you in there as well. So when did you start working in energy?
Hi, Louise. Yeah, I suppose I started with SEAI about 11 years ago, and I've been in the public sector all of my career. I would have started in the fisheries agency, BIM, soon after I finished my master's. And similar to Martine, I did education is in biology and zoology and marine science in particular. I suppose an opportunity arose a number of years ago where secondments were offered from different public sectors, one into the other. And there was an opportunity to move into SEAI. So I had been working for a number of years in marine and fisheries policy in BIM. And I felt that I had kind of done all I could do in that space at the time. So when this opportunity arose, I felt it was something that was really interesting because I recognized that there was real potential in marine renewables in particular. And initially when I came into SEAI, I wasn't working in this space. I was working in kind of energy efficiency and in other programs. So what happened over time was because I had a knowledge in, say, marine policy and some background there, I was working also with the team on the offshore energy space. So eventually I moved fully into offshore energy as well. So it was, I'm delighted to be in this area, and I feel there's real potential and scope to develop my skills and also use some of my former experiences from other sectors.
So, Trish, what does your current role involve then?
So I'm working to develop the offshore program for SEAI, and primarily what we're focused on is supporting the department in policy development. And in particular, we're looking at a piece to look at strategic development for the offshore area, so the offshore renewable energy development plan and supporting the department on that. We're also looking at supporting research in this space. So we work to both develop and support companies to progress technology developments and projects, and also how we can provide infrastructure for testing to be done. So there's a number of, say, specific research test sites throughout Ireland. One is based in UCC, one is based in Galway, and we're developing one in Mayo. So we look at how we can support that infrastructure. And we also, we look at how we can develop specific technologies and projects. So there's funding available through our research grant mechanisms to support individual project developers and researchers in progressing better research and knowledge in this space.
And what have been some of your favorite projects to work on today, Trish, in your current role?
Yeah, so again, I've been really lucky because it is a very broad, it's a very broad space. There's a lot of interesting projects. So we would work on, say, supporting different technology developers to move their technologies on. So at times we're working on very specific projects. And at other times, we're working on the broader strategic and policy space. So, for instance, we'd have a lot of interactions with other departments and agencies on how we can work better to, say, develop better knowledge or data on the offshore environment. So I've been pretty lucky in that I'm able to work on a broad range of projects. We've also done a lot of work, say, in the European space and working with our partners in other European countries on how we can progress this sector. So I don't think I could pick one project in particular. It tends to be just a very interesting area to work in. So we've been very lucky.
Absolutely. It sounds it. I want to put this to both of you, actually. So what exactly is offshore energy, if you were to describe it to someone that's listening who might not be familiar?
I mean, how I would describe it is there's a number of different technologies that we can exploit and develop to basically take energy from the offshore system. So that might be from, say, offshore wind or the wave and tidal, the wave energy or the tide energy. So we look at a whole range of different types of technologies that can get energy out of, say, the resources, be they wind, wave, or tide, and then that energy gets basically transported onto the Irish grid. So that's how I'd explain it.
I think that's a good explanation, but maybe just to add that what we're looking to do overall in terms of energy nationally and internationally is to decarbonize our energy supplies. So that's why you hear so much about offshore nowadays, is that it's a way of moving away from our typical fossil fuels in generating electricity, which has happened, you know, in the past. And because we have such a huge marine resource compared with a lot of countries, there's huge potential there for us to generate a huge proportion, a significant proportion of the energy that we need or the electricity that we need using the opportunities from our marine resource.
And then, Martina, what is Ireland's offshore energy output at the moment then?
Well, at the moment, it's really tiny. There's the Arklow Bank development that, you know, people may be familiar with that was built nearly 20 years ago now, I think, that's got a tiny amount of output. It's 25 megawatts for people who are interested in the numbers. But our ambitions in the climate, in our Programme for Government commitments, are to get to 5 gigawatts by 2030. So essentially what was built originally in Arklow was a demonstrator project, and it's very tiny compared with what the potential scale is in the future.
And actually, the Irish Wind Energy Association's latest report states that offshore wind energy could potentially deliver major decarbonisation by 2030, as you've mentioned, given the number of projects that are in the pipeline in Ireland. I really want to hear what you both think on this. What is the biggest challenge to achieving that target, that 5 gigawatts that you mentioned, Martina?
There's a huge range of challenges in getting to that 2030 target. And some of those are in the area that I work in, and there's others with colleagues are focused on in the department. So from my perspective, underpinning a lot of this development, we have to have a robust legislative regime in place. And that's the piece of work that we're working with colleagues in other departments on, is progressing the legislation to allow the development to happen offshore. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the grid is capable of taking the energy from the offshore projects that are developed. And that kind of work takes, you know, many years to develop the grid to enable that to happen. And there's investments of the order of many millions to go into that. So there's a lot of things that are happening in parallel to enable us to get to the 2030 target. But there's certainly, you know, a long road to get there. And because the projects are so big, they can take up to 10 years to be developed. So we really need to progress on them, you know, in the very near term to start moving on them to allow us to get to those targets by 2030.
And Trish, what would the challenges be?
Yeah, so I suppose I'd agree very much with Martina. And I think there's a number of specific, say, infrastructural and policy challenges that we have at the moment. And in fairness, there's been a lot of work to move them on, to understand them and to move them on and to develop them. I think also that we need to look at kind of the general acceptance for these projects and making sure that we are bringing the public along with us as well in developing these projects. As Martina mentioned, the 5 gigawatts, I mean, that is equivalent to Ireland's current energy needs. So we're talking about significant infrastructure and investment that needs to happen both offshore and onshore. So we need to make sure that people understand that the scale of this and that there's that the end game will be really positive, will be about decarbonizing our whole system. I think it's a massive project for Ireland that we all need to get behind. So I suppose what we'll be really focusing on is how we can build that story and try and build that support for these projects, because they will be seen as individual projects, but together they will have an overall goal.
And if I might just add to that as well, that these projects, because they're typically, you know, around the coast, there's a huge opportunity for communities in those areas to benefit, both from, you know, project or doing work directly for the offshore wind farms and during the construction phases, but also long term in providing operational maintenance support, but also in the supply chain development. So there's lots of companies that can get into that space of developing products and services to help these projects once they're up and running and in operational mode. So I think there's a good news story for everyone in the country, and I think Patricia is right that there needs to be a lot of work done to communicate that and make sure that it's well understood.
And what's your next big focus, Martina, on this for 2021? What needs to happen?
So the immediate focus and something that is a top priority for us is working on the legislation. So there was commitments in the programme for government around that, and we're working very closely with our colleagues in the Department of Housing who are leading on this to make sure that we get the current bill progressed and enacted as quickly as possible.
Brilliant. And Trish, for 2021 and the near future for SEAI, what's your kind of primary focus?
Yeah, so I suppose it's in supporting Martina and the department in their work programs, but also in looking at how we can develop the OREDP and look at moving that forward, and also progressing additional research projects. There'll be a significant call out later this year. And as Martina mentions, there's opportunities, within communities for these projects. So we will be looking at calls that are specifically targeting and understanding what those additional opportunities might be.
Fantastic. So I want to move on to, and this is for both of you. So the energy sector, as we know, has historically been a very male-dominated sector. I'd love to hear your thoughts on, do you see this changing or how have you seen it change so far?
Yeah, well, traditionally, I think, many of the energy sectors have been historically very male-orientated. I'm definitely seeing a greater influx of women into this space. I think there's lots of opportunities for people with different backgrounds in this space. It's not just all about engineering. And I think, I suppose, myself and Martina demonstrate that that we have taken different career paths to get here. But I definitely am seeing more women involved in this sector. And for instance, we had a meeting there recently where I think there was one man in amongst 8 of us. Now, what I do see is that, and I think it's not uncommon, regardless of the career you're in, I do see that women get to a certain level. And then once we start getting into the senior levels, we probably are kind of at, a minority. But that's something that we're looking at within SEI on how we could maybe try and positively tackle it. But that's my view. I don't know, Martina, if you've seen differently.
Well, I suppose I've joined the energy area in general since just the end of 2019. So it's relatively new to me, working first in the oil and gas before moving to offshore renewables. And from my perspective, the industry is largely male. I think there, what I've seen, there's a few women here and there, but certainly the majority are male. And even within the department, I've noticed it's quite different to other places I would have worked, where, again, it's about, I would say, 3/4 male in the energy area. So I think there's quite a bit of work to do to balance that. And I suppose I'm very mindful. We're at the start of building or helping to build this new industry that's potentially going to benefit, you know, lots of communities in the country. And I think I'm certainly very mindful, and people in my team are, that as we move forward, that we try to make sure that there's opportunities for all. And I think there can be a risk with certain sectors like this being viewed as it's all about engineering, for example, and then it gets this very sort of male perspective that it's only for men. But I think there's some issues there in terms of, you know, why aren't more women going into engineering is one, for example. But the other is looking at making sure people are aware of the broader range of roles that are possible. And I know I've worked in the past in one of the US multinationals in the tech sector, and there's similar challenges there that everyone thought you had to be a programmer to work there, but you didn't. You know, there's a huge range of roles that are open to all people to participate in. And I think it's very something we're mindful of as we're looking at how to develop the sector going forward, that that gender piece is something that we're thinking through, and how do we encourage that? Because even at presentations or events we go to, it tends to be men dominating the speaking parts, if you like. And I think it would be good to see that change, because people don't see, if they can't see where they could be, if women don't see the opportunities, then they're going to not really think about it as much as they might otherwise. So I think it's important to have visibility as to the opportunities that exist for women, and to try and create those opportunities where we can.
Absolutely. And just for your own personal experiences, did you find it challenging to progress in this sector as a woman?
Well, I suppose I've been working for a while, and as I've said, I've moved around quite a bit, and I think some of the experiences that I've had have helped me. You know, I have the confidence, and I can go into a role like this where, you know, when you start a new role, I don't know a huge amount about it, but I'm not afraid to say that and admit that and ask people to explain what it is that they're talking about. So I suppose for me personally, it hasn't been as intimidating, but I can see it could be for people who are maybe starting out in their career. And I think that's where, as leaders and managers, we have a role to play to make sure that those opportunities are made clear to people, and people are given the confidence and the backing that even if they're in an environment that could be very male dominated, that people still feel they can speak up and speak out, and that their views are as valid as everyone else's. And it was described to me a couple of years ago, I heard someone talk about moving into roles where you can live with the level of discomfort. And that was a good way of describing it for me. When you move to a new role, it's never comfortable, but you know, you have to be able to live with the level of discomfort there in order to push yourself on and develop, as well as being able to perform effectively. And I suppose I can see that in the energy sector. There is, as I've said, there is more men than women, but I think the confidence that I've had from the past has helped me address that so far anyway.
I think that's really important, to live with the level of discomfort. I think that's probably one of the kind of challenges for women, is that they maybe think that, oh, I wouldn't be comfortable doing that position, or, you know, in that position maybe. Whereas men probably don't think that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think there is that whole element around the, you know, the need to lean in at times, where you do need to push yourself and push yourself into that zone that you're not 100% comfortable, because that's where you really learn, and you really learn about yourself and, you know, kind of your limitations and, you know, where you can get to as well. But I'd agree with a lot of what Martina is saying, and as leaders, like we always need to be mindful about bringing this issue along. And one of the things that within SCAI we've been quite engaged in over the last number of years is how we can do that, and you know, how we can influence and change the way things happen. And like, for instance, that whole thing around events and seeing kind of, you know, if it's primarily male orientated, kind of how do we change that? How do we actively do that? And there have been, I suppose, efforts to increase the number of women in speaking slots, etc., at our events, at how we have, you know, we tend to organize an event at our main, the likes of the Energy Show, which would be one of our key events of the year, but where we have specific, you know, speaking slots on it. And then also looking at how we might award certain projects that show a greater tendency towards gender balance. So we're looking at how we can influence these things and help to, I suppose, bring women along in this space as much as we can.
Yeah, I think it's really important that to just acknowledge that it doesn't just happen, or it's not going to happen overnight, that these are things that we're actively trying to change. And maybe that is something that needs to be more visible in itself, that we need to actually say that we are giving women more speaking slots and we are actively trying to address it. So do you think that that you face some of these challenges, Trish? Would that be fair to say?
I don't know if I've faced them, because I would tend to just keep going. You know, I would have a tendency to, you know, and like if I'm offered a speaking slot, there are times where I'm like, oh God, but I just say, no, I'll take it. Absolutely. So like definitely there would have been times where it, you know, I would have been absolutely like terrified about having to get up and speak at different events, but I knew I had to keep pushing myself forward. And you just, you know, and the thing, as Martina says, the more we see it, the more it becomes normal. So if we're not seeing women up there speaking at different events, it becomes normal not to see them, you know. So we definitely need to be mindful of that. So I can't say that I've ever felt that, you know, I've suffered from it, but I think maybe that's just because I've a tendency just get on with it, you know.
And to put yourself in those discomforts.
I'm good at making myself uncomfortable, yeah.
And live with the level of discomfort, as Martina was saying, yeah. And I want to ask you both then as well, what would you say to someone maybe starting off in their career or considering it in college, maybe someone doing the Leaving Cert now, maybe, you know, who might be thinking that engineering isn't for them because it's a male-dominated area? What should they do?
I think that the key with anything that you choose to do is you have to have an interest and you have to enjoy it. At least that's been the key for me. And I think that's where the passion and the interest comes from, to keep going. And you do need a lot of resilience, regardless whether you're a man or a woman, and particularly working in this type of environment where we're all working remotely. It's important, I think, to be doing something that you really enjoy. Yeah. But I'd also say that nothing you do now when you're 18 or 21 or even 30 locks you in forever, that I think following your passions and doing work that you're interested in is more important than setting out. Well, for me anyway, it's worked out that I didn't set out however many years ago and say, oh, well, I want to be in this role by 2021. That's not how it's worked for me. But I think having the confidence to go with what it is that you're interested in is a key. And then getting as much experience as possible and not being afraid to move around, not being afraid to try new things. I think that's worked out for me. It can be challenging and difficult to move from your own area of comfort, you know, in a role where you know everyone and an organization where you're known and maybe you have a reputation, and to move somewhere else. But I think that's how you grow, as Patricia said as well. It's how we grow and develop. And it's what gives you experience then to be able to take on bigger challenges in the future. So I don't know if that answers the question, but they're my thoughts on it anyway.
Absolutely. And Trish, what would you say to someone?
Yeah, I would definitely say, Martina says, if you have a passion for science or engineering, go for it. There's huge opportunities and potential in both areas for women, and we have a huge amount to contribute. So go for it. And I would absolutely agree with Martina. Once you have a passion, you follow that passion, you know, things will come right for you. And to stay interested, to challenge yourself, And don't be afraid of failure, because from failure we learn so much. So, you know, if the reason why you're kind of hesitant about doing anything is because you might fail in it, I would say go for it, because you won't know unless you try. So I think the main thing is, yeah, follow your passion, make sure you're interested, and the rest of life will slot into place, I think.
And I think one of the really important messages that I've picked up from both of you chatting there is that it doesn't have to be about engineering. I suppose I'm in the communications and marketing sector, and I'm working within energy. So there is loads of opportunities out there. Maybe if engineering isn't for you, if you're a woman, there's so many other roles that you can get into the sector as well, which is something that maybe isn't kind of told to people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree. I mean, I think, you know, we have a lot of really, really talented women working in SEAI and in the department who haven't backgrounds in engineering or science and are really contributing to this space. And it's really important that we have that multidisciplinary input, because it is like energy is about all of society and supporting all of society. So I think it's really important that that's reflected in our, you know, our working environment and the skills that we have in the organizations.
Yeah, it's something that's going to affect every single person living in Ireland. And I think you talked about the communities that, you know, offshore energy can help, the differences that it can make, and that there's definitely opportunities for everyone there, I think. So to both of you, what do you think, or what would you hope the future of offshore energy sector in Ireland looks like?
Well, I very much hope that over the next decade that we're going to see the sector take off in Ireland, because I think it has huge benefits to offer for society in general, not only in reducing our emissions, but also in creating skilled jobs in a sustainable industry into the future that will benefit particularly coastal communities as well as society in general. So I think we're very much at the start of something big that is going to happen. But as Trish said earlier, we need to make sure that we bring the communities with us and make sure that there's good public understanding of the benefits that this is going to bring in the very near term over the next decade.
Brilliant. And Trish, what would you like the future of offshore energy in Ireland to look like?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's absolutely massive potential in this area. And it is, there's a potential to I suppose, put Ireland on the map and in the centre of the renewable space for the whole of Europe. Our offshore potential is the envy of most European countries, because we have such a massive economic zone, marine economic zone, and because of the resource, so because of the strength of the wave and the wind resource off the coast, like, you know, it has been compared to the Saudi Arabia of the offshore renewables. So there is massive potential here, and I really hope that we manage to leverage it and build it to the benefit of all of Irish society.
Fantastic. So just to finish, Martine and Trish, would you have any kind of final inspirational words for women who are looking to get into this sector or who may be struggling to advance in this sector?
I suppose what I would say is that certainly it's a sector that, you know, women should engage in and can influence and definitely can bring real value to. So I would welcome anyone who has an interest in the area to engage at work, and there will be significant opportunities in this space. And I suppose it's, again, it's about following your passion and your area and your expertise, and like, you know, you said yourself, Louise, you don't necessarily have to come with a scientific or an engineering background to be successful in this space. There's many women who are forging really, really interesting careers and really having a useful input into the sector who've come from different areas. So if you have an interest, I would certainly suggest that you basically look to the opportunities that will be coming out and are already in the pipeline in the both in the public and in the private sectors, and basically get to know the sector. So there are plenty of events that happen in this space, and people can certainly look to join one of those events. They're free. And one area actually, or one point of information would be the Women in Energy LinkedIn page. So SEAI are managing that page. I think, Louise, you're doing a lot of that work yourself. And, you know, we'd often have different events listed there. So certainly that would be a good resource for anybody interested in this space.
And I think to reach out to someone as well, Trish, because it's a small but very helpful and very friendly community as well. Absolutely.
That's true.
Martina, anything you'd like to finally add?
Well, I think Trish has covered a lot of it there. I think the key is there's going to be an awful lot happening in this space over the next number of years, and keeping an eye on the media, just being aware of what's going on in the sector. There will be a lot more opportunities arising, and just knowing what's going on, I think, will help you identify where there are potential opportunities and how you can best work towards them. So it'd be great to see more women in the sector. Is something we'd definitely encourage, and see what we can do from a policy perspective. But I'd encourage anyone to go for it if you're interested. It'd be great.
Martina and Trish, I want to thank you both so much for joining me today on the 180 Degrees podcast. I think your passion and enthusiasm for both of your roles is contagious. So hopefully someone listening out there will be moved to join us in the energy sector. Until next time, thank you.
Thanks, Louise.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, then please like, share, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you're listening now. You'll find previous episodes on our website, seai.ie/podcast, along with information about our grants and supports.